Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Between the Ropes podcast. Brian Fritz here. We've got breaking news. We've got a busy period for WWE, and we've got the right guest to talk about everything. Kevin Eck from the Eck Factor blog. You can find over at kevineckwrestling.sportsblog.com. How's your day been, Kevin? Anything pop up that might ruin it?
Yeah, you know, everything was going nice, and a nice, quiet, uneventful day. And then, you know, the guy who just ruins everything in professional wrestling or sports entertainment, Roman Reigns. Ruined my day.
Roman Reigns, official buzz killer. Anybody doesn't know the news yet. So Roman Reigns, it was learned today, WWE put out a statement. Roman has been suspended 30 days for his first violation of the company wellness policy. It is not known exactly what he took. WWE will not say. We don't know if Roman is going to say. He's already put out an apology talking about it and said that he owns it. He apologized to his fans and friends and family, and they had just come off on Raw making the main event for Battleground between himself and Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, and that match can still take place because he's suspended for 30 days, and Battleground is in 33 days. So let's backtrack a little bit then. So it was pretty surprising, I think, to me and to you, that he lost the championship at Sunday. What was your first reaction when he lost the title?
I was, as you just said, I was surprised. I mean, I thought that this was, I thought Vince McMahon was planning on a lengthy title reign for Roman. His first two were very quick, and you know, they didn't really have the impact. And I think this one, you know, he won it at WrestleMania from Triple H. This was sort of going to be the Roman Reigns era, and it was going to, I don't know how long it was going to last, but I think it was going to be pretty lengthy. So I did not see him losing the title for sure to Seth. Now, when it happened, I was surprised not only that he lost it, but he lost it clean. And it was very odd the way that match was laid out. Roman worked pretty much as a heel. He was aggressive. He was nasty. He was, you know, putting the bad mouth on Seth, telling him to quit. Where Seth, on the other hand, worked like a babyface. He worked from underneath, and he was constantly fighting back, and he didn't do anything underhanded, and then he wins the title clean. It was very confusing the way it was laid out. However, I will say this. Once Seth did get the 1-2-3 and win the championship, I was just waiting for Dean Ambrose's music to hit, because I didn't think Seth was going to get a title reign at that point. I saw the writing on the wall as soon as that three count was made. Dean's going to come out, cash in, and we're getting our triple threat. Whether it was going to be at Battleground or SummerSlam, I wasn't sure, but it seemed pretty obvious at that point. But you know, to answer your question, I was really, really surprised that Roman lost the title at this point, because I know Vince, believe it or not, he hates flipping the titles. And you know, when I worked there, that was one of the things he constantly, I don't want to keep flipping the titles. That's why CM Punk held it for over a year at one point. So I can't imagine that this was planned. I really believe WWE learned about the suspension, and they have the flexibility now. They didn't do anything underhand here. The way the policy is written, it's up to them to when they want to administer the suspension. So they very well could have decided, okay, you're going to drop the title at Money in the Bank, you'll appear on Raw the next night, and then we announce the suspension. It's 30 days, and you're back in time for Battleground.
And to me, it's pretty obvious he is going to be at Battleground, because they had to have known that the suspension was coming, because that's why they took the title off him, like you said. They went ahead and they still made the match at Battleground regardless. So I guess the question begs then, so a guy is coming off a wellness policy violation, yet WWE, knowing that this was coming, still put him in the main event of a pay-per-view. What kind of precedent do you think this sets, knowing that, okay, so somebody just violated the policy, he's been suspended 30 days, but right when he comes back, he's going to be main eventing one of their big shows?
Well, I think one of the things is, you know, we don't know what the test was for that he failed. We don't know whether it was performance enhancer. We don't know whether it was something over the counter. I mean, you hear about this all the time with athletes in other sports where they took something that they didn't realize was on the banned substance list. And so we have no idea. It's possible that if this seemed like more of an honest mistake, that maybe WWE, the powers that be, are a little more forgiving as far as his spot on the card. And, you know, on the other hand, it's like, let's be honest. If you're a star in this business, you do get treated differently than people who aren't big stars. You know, Randy Orton has two strikes, and you know, at one point he was knocked down the card a little bit, but always one of the top guys. You know, Jeff Hardy, same thing. So I feel like if you have a certain level of stardom, and if there a company's invested in you, and obviously they have major plans for Roman, the Shield, the first ever time they're all going to be in the ring against each other as opponents. There are major plans here, and I don't think they want to screw up their plans at this point. I think there's also some self-interest there. And I think that's really what it comes down to. If they see value in Roman, they're invested in him, and it may have been an honest mistake on his part. We just don't know. We don't know that aspect of it.
Yeah, and I think that plays a huge part into it. Like you said, like, we don't know if it was a PED or was it an over-the-counter substance. Now, WWE cannot say by law. Now, Roman can come out and he can say, and I don't know if he is going to or not. We'll see. He's usually a pretty private guy when it comes to different things. In a situation like this, though, if it is an over-the-counter drug, I would probably try to get the word out there. But I think one of the other things that goes into you know, how he's going to be viewed, especially by his peers, is not only which one of those two it is, but also it's a little bit of a different time. And tell me if you agree, because in the past, everything was so cutthroat that, you know, people would be like, man, this guy's coming off a suspension. I don't care what it's for. And they're putting him in the main event and people are going to be upset about this. I'm not saying people aren't going to be upset now, but I think the locker room is a little bit different. And if it is something that's over the counter, I think people would be a little bit more understanding. And it's not as, you know, there's always going to be politics in wrestling, but I don't think it's as necessarily as politically charged of a locker room.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. And, you know, I think as far as his colleagues are concerned, I don't really think there'll be, you know, just my opinion, but I don't think there'll be a big backlash on him. Reigns always seemed to get along well with everybody. You know, when I was at WWE, I never heard anybody that really had a problem with him. As far as the fans, you know, that's a different story. I mean, obviously already they can't stand the guy. So you throw a wellness policy violation on top of their, you know, clear dislike for him already. I don't think Roman's going to get a good reaction when he returns from this suspension. And, you know, you just have to wonder, will this be the thing that finally pushes Vince to go full-on heel with Roman? It seems like they're inching more and more towards that with, you know, I'm not a good guy, I'm not a bad guy, I'm the guy. He's not pandering to the crowd as much. He actually, sort of a little impromptu moment, and had a few nasty words for the crowd on Raw Monday night. Again, he wrestled very aggressively and heelish to some extent, had Money in the Bank. So you wonder if this will be the thing that finally makes Vince decide, well, you know what, we've been fighting an uphill battle anyway with trying to get people to cheer for him. The suspension's only going to, you know, multiply that problem. So let's just go with it.
And to me, there's no excuse not to turn him heel now. Like before, they had a reason for it and they were trying to keep him on a path. But now with the suspension and everything with the fans and he's no longer the champion, I don't think there's really an excuse not to, you know, just go with it at this point.
I agree. And, you know, I really thought, or at least hoped, that Sunday at Money in the Bank that we were going to get the double turn. It just seemed like everything was, all the stars had aligned for that to happen. The fans, they want a reason to cheer Seth. Obviously, we saw that with the huge ovation he got when he first made his return. They want to get behind the guy, but WWE is not giving them a reason to. Seth is he turned on the crowd on his first night back, and he's not a very likable. He's got a story, you know, coming back from the injury, having never lost sight. You want to get behind the guy. Then he works his butt off. He gets the title back, and his buddy cashes in on him 10 seconds later, and he loses the title. So it's like he's a very sympathetic figure on the one hand, but he's not really doing anything as far as interacting with the crowd that is giving them a reason to feel good about cheering him. So, you know, it's all set up right there. You know, all WWE has to do is just flip that switch, have Seth kind of let the people in, and, you know, stop cutting those really annoying heel promos that he does. And, you know, I think we can get that turn.
So when you worked for WWE on the creative team, what were a couple of guys, or what were there instances of when guys got suspended while you were there, and how was it treated when it came to the creative team?
Yeah, when we got, usually we would hear about it from Triple H. You know, we would be in the booking meeting with Vince. We would usually meet, like on a Thursday, we would have our booking meeting with Vince. And Hunter, when I first got there, Hunter would sit on those meetings, and after a while, he didn't. But there were times when he would come in and just, you know, if he had an announcement to make, like you signed somebody, or a lot of times it was a wellness policy violation, he would let us know, and then we would have to plan accordingly. And, you know, I remember a couple times, I think in the case of R-Truth, I'm not 100% sure about this, but I think he may have been a co-holder of the tag team title. If it wasn't him, it was someone. But anyway, Vince said, hey, we're going to, you know, again, it's within their rights. Vince said, hey, we're going to do the right thing. We're going to, you know, he's got to be suspended. It's really out of their hands. They have to do it. But again, there's some flexibility there with the timing. So some things are put in motion. If a guy has a title, it's set that he drops it at a certain time, and they go on from there. It's not like as soon as you hear that they failed the test, that the suspension takes place immediately. Again, there's some flexibility where WWE can say, all right, if it's a guy that has a tag team title or whatever it is, he just failed a test. All right, as soon as we can have him drop the title, he's going to do it, and then he's going to be suspended, rather than suspending him first, and then you got to figure out what to do with the title after. And there weren't that many instances of suspensions when I was there. It was just a handful, I think, but that's the way they handled it.
And I think the other thing that's interesting about this is, and I know people are going to be skeptical, and rightfully so, but now I think WWE has a reason to say, for all of you critics of our wellness policy and saying it's not legitimate, that we don't go after our top guys, we just suspended one of our top guys for 30 days.
No question. I would go so far as to say, you can make a case, Randy Orton, Jeff Hardy, I don't know, but you can make the case that Roman Reigns is the biggest name to have a wellness policy violation failure. So, yeah, I think this, you know, because I think, again, you mentioned people being skeptical. A lot of times you see these suspensions laid down, and you see names like, you know, Hornswoggle, you know, or Adam Rose, or it always seems to be guys that are a little bit lower in the middle or lower card, and you never really get that big superstar, again, except for a guy like Randy Orton, or, you know, I think Jeff Hardy has happened a couple times. You know, and I'm not going to name any specific names, but the very tip-top guys, you don't see them ever failing a test. And I know that does make a lot of fans skeptical. Roman Reigns, every fan knows he's the chosen one. He is Vince's guy. They got a lot invested in him. And so when he fails a test, yes, I think this is exhibit A for WWE to say, look, this is legitimate testing. Roman Reigns failed a test and is being suspended for 30 days.
And it's going to be crazy now just to think about the booking, because, I mean, whether you want to make the argument of should he be in the main event for Battleground or not, I mean, he's in it, as we said here right now. And it's going to be him and Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. And there was a couple of different directions they could have gone here, whether it was going to be or they can still go. You know, there was some thinking that maybe Reigns would win it back, or there would be some kind of disputed finish that would lead to the creation of another world championship, because they're doing the brand extension. They can then have one for Raw and one for SmackDown. And, you know, that I think that was going to happen anyway. Whether it could have been a situation where Roman would have left as champion, but then they could have done this disputed finish, you know, going with going into Battleground or coming out of Battleground. And then now it's just topsy-turvy the way that everything's gone. How long do you think, even if it is something that's over the counter, do you think just because there is a violation here that there would be a hesitation for a while to put a championship back on Roman?
That's a really good question, and only one man, you know, which is Vince McMahon, has the answer to that. And again, I think a lot of it probably depends on, like we said, what the violation was. And was it a performance enhancer? Was it something over the counter? Was it a mistake? I think that will probably go a long way in determining what goes on with Roman from here. You know, has he fallen out of favor with Vince because of this? I don't know. We'll certainly have to take a wait and see. But you know, you just mentioned the disputed finish and the splitting of the titles. That very well, you know, we didn't get that scenario, but we very well may see two world champions again. I really hope WWE doesn't go that route. I think that really watered things down before, and you know, we finally got an undisputed champion, and now to go back to splitting it up again, I don't know. I don't know how you feel about it. I'm not a fan of it.
I'm not a fan of it either, and I'm really not going to be a fan of it if they have two world champions, and then 5 years from now, they decide to put them back together again in the biggest match in WWE history.
which you know will happen, you know, because we've seen it go in cycles. There's been two undisputed champions, right? They did it once before with Jericho, and then they split them up, and now we've got an undisputed champion, and you know there are rumors running around they're going to split them up again. And you're right, somewhere down the line it'll be a big match again to have, you know, one champion and both titles on the line. But I really think it would be. It just waters everything down, like I said. I think having one world champion that goes on both shows, in a way, it kind of reminds me of the old days when, you know, when there was an NWA champion and he would go to every territory. Now, again, this is only two shows, not like he's going to all these different territories, but he's set apart from everyone else. He's not the champion of a show or of a brand. He is the champion of the world. He's the champion of the entire company. And everybody's after what he has, whether you're on Raw or whether you're on SmackDown, everybody's gunning for that one title, not you're gunning for the SmackDown title or the Raw title.
I totally agree, because I like the importance of that. I would have him, and I would have the women's champion and the tag team champion go on, just have one set, have them be on both brands. And then you could have, you know, the Intercontinental Championship on one, the United States Championship on the other. And I would go so far, too, when it comes to the women following this brand extension, I would only put the women on one show. I would put them only on Raw. I wouldn't put them on SmackDown.
That's interesting. You know, you're right. I mean, splitting the women's roster in half, probably not the greatest idea. Maybe making the women special to one show, and if you had something like they wanted to go this route, cruiserweights, you know, on another show.
I would put the tag teams on SmackDown and put the women on Raw.
You could do that. You could certainly do that. And I also love the idea of the Intercontinental Champion being specific to one show and the U.S. Champion on the other. That's kind of like, again, to use the old analogy of the NWA, that's sort of like the regional champion, right? You're not the world champion. You're the champion of your region. For your show, you know, I love that idea, and I really hope, you know, I sound like a broken record, but I really hope WWE goes that route rather than just creating a whole extra set of titles, because I really do think it just gets watered down, and the titles don't mean it.
I agree, man. The last thing they need is more championships. I want to go back to one thing. So we talked about Roman, you know, how badly we'd like to see him go heel and everything. How weird has, especially like the last few days, Ben, when it comes to, or even backtrack to that, okay, the past month, how weird has it been to you when it comes to how guys are booked and how they're played out on TV? From this standpoint, Seth Rollins' highly anticipated return, he gets a babyface reaction on the pay-per-view when he comes out. The next night on Raw, he turns heel. Then Dean Ambrose is a guy that was hot going into Mania. At WrestleMania, he loses to Brock Lesnar in a match that really didn't help him out much. Has been
not at all
on the back burner since then. And out of nowhere, they jump him to making him a champion. And he's doing some heelish tendencies, including jumping Roman Reigns from behind when he cashes in Money in the Bank. You know, Rollins is still getting cheered heavily by the audience. I mean, it's all over the place when it comes to this. I think WWE just doesn't care. All they want is a reaction from guys, and they're not worried about babyface or heel.
I think you're right. I think WWE is going a lot more into the shades of gray area, which I'm, in a sense, I'm kind of a traditionalist. Like, I believe good guys and bad guys has worked forever in pro wrestling, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Now, you can certainly have different shades within a babyface or a heel. Obviously, Bob Backlund, 1978, was a babyface. So was Steve Austin in 1997. Two very different characters. But both, if you had to put them on the side of the ledger of fan favorite or villain, you know, they're both on the fan favorite side. So, to your point, though, I think, you know, and I see a lot of this in, you know, it's like in Ring of Honor or New Japan. I think people are, there's not necessarily well-defined good guys and bad guys. There are people that are over. You're either over or you're not. And I feel like people are reacting to the action and the spots rather than, you know, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. I think ultimately, good guys, bad guys just works better because I think you need to be more emotionally invested in it. And look, there's always going to be a segment of people who are going to cheer for the villains. I know this firsthand. Growing up, I loved the bad guys. I always thought the bad guys were more interesting. I was in the minority of people who were cheering for the heels. So you're always going to have that. But, you know, I think Vince might be here listening to the crowd as well. And you know, his top baby faces, Roman Reigns and John Cena, are on most nights getting booed out of the building. Newcomers, guys that come in with some indie buzz behind them, like an AJ Styles, he's getting cheered even after he turns heel. So I think Vince is listening. You know, as much as he gets accused of not listening to the audience, I think he's listening to this somewhat. But to me, there's still a way to tell the story. And I think that's, to your point, I think that's what's a little bit all over the place, is I'm seeing inconsistencies in the characters.
Yeah.
Dean Ambrose, these past, like that to me was completely out of character. It's like a whole new set of writers came in, had never heard of Dean Ambrose before, and just started to map out, you know, how he would act. He and Roman have been like best friends. Now, they fight on occasion when they're fighting for the title, but it's always like no matter what, they're going to be friends afterwards. Dean's been kind of a jerk, right, to Roman.
Yep.
That money in the bank. You know, he's like, hey, I'd cash in on you, too. I'll hit you in the mouth with the briefcase. And then he hit Dirty Deeds on him on Raw at the end of the show. That, to me, seemed completely unrealistic based on everything we've seen between the two of them leading up to that.
I think that Vince just likes the whole reaction thing for a couple of reasons. The biggest one being, see, I am changing with the times. I am listening to the audience. I am adapting. I am like you, though, where I'm more of a traditionalist. But there are a select few people or acts that you really can't control, and you just have to let the crowd do what they're going to do. And to me, the biggest ones that stand out, and it's not just WWE or Cena. I guess you could put Reigns in that. And like the Bullet Club when it comes to Ring of Honor, because people just love cheering for those guys no matter what they do. But, I mean, a guy like AJ Styles comes in, but then he, you know, and he's a babyface and people are going to cheer him, and then he turns heel. I think there is a way to put enough heat on the guy to where you can say people are not going to cheer him. I mean, like you said, there's going to be a select few people that, or some, that no matter what, they're going to cheer heels. But I think there's a way that you can kind of control the narrative a little bit better. And I think they're doing that in some ways when it comes to AJ. Just he's, you know, doing this cocky persona. And you watch AJ Styles along with Gallows and Anderson, and to me, they're doing what they did in New Japan. And, you know, they're going to be that kind of a character. They're going to be that kind of an act. And that's fine. And I think that's going to get them a lot of heat from people, you know, as people start seeing that defined a lot more. But I think there's kind of a little bit more of a win-win situation when it comes to this. And it is so much easier, like you said, to get emotion on guys when you know this guy's a good guy, this guy's a bad guy. Or it doesn't even have to be in that kind of, you know, definition. Maybe it's, this guy's the cool guy, and this guy's not cool. So why would you want to cheer for a guy that's not cool?
Right. And to me, it's the easiest thing to do is, if you want to get a reaction, it's just how they react to the crowd themselves. If I see AJ Styles, okay, I like him. He's cool. He's got cool moves. Yeah, there's a buzz from the indies, all that. Okay, great. I love this guy. But then he tells the crowd, I don't care what you think. You know, he threw that in the other night in his Raw promo. You think I care what these people think? Just a little line like that tells you this isn't a likable guy. If I'm an audience member and he's insulting me, well, I probably don't like that guy. So it's just a little thing like that. Now, to use the Bullet Club scenario as an example, you know, they had a huge angle in Ring of Honor not too long ago with the Young Bucks, and Adam Cole joined the Bullet Club, and, you know, they beat up everybody in Ring of Honor, not just wrestlers. They beat up you know, announcers and referees and a woman, Taylor Hendricks, got super kicked. And, it was such a moment, a heel moment. It was legit heat. But, you know, the very next show, the Young Bucks are out there doing the Too Sweet gimmick with the crowd.
Right.
So, how do I hate these guys? You know, they're out there slapping hands with me and selling merch and hanging out with fans at the merch table. So, obviously, you know, it's a different approach. And they don't want to be true heels.
No, they don't, you know. I mean, just look at what happened. You know, on that show where Adam Cole goes to the Bullet Club, and then afterwards, he's selling, like, a ton of merchandise along with the rest of the group. It's just, like, it's just weird. And, I mean, I've had this discussion on here before, and it's almost like, am I just behind the times? Am I, like, the old fuddy-duddy now that's like, I remember back in my day, you know? Or is it, I think what it is right now is it's an experiment. And I think everybody's kind of finding out about this, you know? And we'll know. Probably not until next year, even. 2016 is kind of the year of the experiment when it comes to baby faces and heels. And who knows? I mean, they've tried it before, but it was one of those. It was that time when Vince flat out said, we don't believe in good guys versus bad guys. And then he reverted back to it. But I guess we'll find out, you know, within the next year if it's something that's successful or maybe it's something that they try to get away from.
Yeah, and you just alluded to it. I mean, maybe the climate is right now. To not have traditional baby faces and heels, and we kind of go with more personalities. And, you know, some people like this guy, some people like that guy, and neither one is going to be a traditional heel or face. What you alluded to was the Attitude Era. And in the very beginning of that, it was a lot of, and I think some of that was the ECW, or actually a lot of it, I think, was the ECW influence. It was the NWO being the really cool heels. And, you know, at that point, it was just like everybody was kind of a edgy, badass type character in WWE. And, you know, whether it was The Undertaker or Austin or whoever, it's like none of these guys were traditional what you would expect of as good guys, and anybody could fight anybody. To me, one of the greatest feuds of all time was Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. And yes, in the beginning of that feud, you know, they were both baby faces, but, you know, but eventually when you got to the Attitude Era, you know, some of the most compelling TV I ever saw was when Bret was a heel, Shawn was, I think, in the process of turning heel, and they would just go out in the ring and shoot on each other. And you really couldn't say, there was really no good guy or babyface, but it just felt so real, and I think that's one of the rare instances where you didn't need a heel or a face. You had two guys that the smart fans knew legitimately did not like each other. And just to hear those guys out there cutting promos on each other that you knew they were going off script and getting personal was fascinating TV. Now, to me, that was kind of an anomaly. I don't know if anything like that could ever really happen again, but you know, that's the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of that era and how there really were no good guys or bad guys for a period of time.
It kind of did happen again, though. And not even kind of. It did happen again, and it happened under your watch or while you were there, because it happened between The Rock and John Cena.
Yeah, but I think... When that happened, I think it was clear to me as that was going on that they were both baby faces. They were clearly both fan favorites who didn't like each other.
But they shot on each other. I mean, we remember the whole, you know, Cena exposing Rock for writing Cliff Notes on his arm.
Absolutely. But I guess I look at it this way, too, that there's two baby faces who are going at it like that. Two babies, they're both popular. They both pander to the fans, but they just don't like each other. There's a dislike there.
Yeah,
I think that's more palpable. That's more, it's easier to accept than if you have two guys that nobody likes who are out there shooting on each other. But that's why I thought it was just such an anomaly that the Shawn Brett thing worked. Because if you think about it on the surface, here's two heels going out there cutting promos on each other. You think, oh, man, that could never work. Who would care? But I think just because it was such a unique situation, I think that's what made that situation work.
Well, here's another thing about the Roman situation. So we've got this draft coming up on the first ever live SmackDown, or once it moves permanently to being a live show. So that's coming up on July 19th. What do you think the suspension does, or does it do anything when it comes to how the draft is going to play out? Because I don't even think WWE knows for a fact exactly what's going on. I think it's just a totally fluid situation up until they get into it. And there's been so much talk or speculation that Cena's going to be the top guy on one brand, Roman on the other, or maybe they put him on the same one. Who the heck knows? I really wonder if maybe this changes that now.
Well, I mean, it remains to be seen. You know, the question will be, though, if Roman is, let's say Roman is fallen out of favor to some extent, and he's not going to be the face of one of the brands. The question is, who is it then? You know, okay, John Cena's one. Who's the other? And I don't know that is the answer Dean Ambrose. You know, is it Seth Rollins? I don't know. You know, that time will tell. But for my money, you know, whether he's a face or a heel, I still think Roman Reigns has the second most value of anyone in the company next to John Cena. That's just my opinion. I don't think Ambrose or Rollins necessarily are ready to jump over him and take that spot. And I don't even know if we'll have to see if they're given that opportunity to do so. I have no idea. Again, that's a question that only Vince McMahon can answer, and I'd love to be a fly on the wall and know, you know, what his reaction was to the suspension and, you know, how upset, if at all, he is at Roman, and if it is going to affect his standing.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out and how everybody, you know, looks at Roman. And if Rollins had been back for a while, or say he never even got injured, I think you could make the argument that he would be the number two guy. But, you know, he hasn't been back long enough, I don't think, for that to happen. Ambrose, you know, I'm not certain yet. I mean, it's a different kind of an act. So the funny thing is, too, when you look at WWE right now, I think they have an extremely talented roster, a very deep roster. But you can be as deep as you want. We all know that what sells is going to be, you know, who are your top guys? Do you have truly top stars in your company? And the audience sees them as top guys. So take this from your experience when you worked there. How easy or how difficult is it to truly make a top star?
Oh my! It obviously it's incredibly hard to do it. You know, when I was there, look, they've been looking for the next John Cena for a long time. You know, Vince always has his eye on the future. Who's the next man up? And during my time there, between 2011 and 2014, they were really looking for that guy. And, you know, Punk sort of assumed that role. But I think, you know, the feeling was that he is never going to be the John Cena guy just because of his personality. I think this is something you and I have talked about before, that, you know, the wrestling ability obviously is there, but beyond that, the intangibles, the way he deals with people outside the company, being the quote-unquote face of the company and the charities and all those things, can CM Punk be that guy? Because that's what's good. That's all those responsibilities go along with it. And the consensus was, no, Punk will not be that guy. So Sheamus was kind of the guy that was given that chance to be the number two guy. And, you know, could he one day, when it's time for John to step down or take a step back, could Sheamus be that guy? And, you know, I know you and I both love Sheamus as a person, but I think it's pretty obvious that he's never going to attain that it didn't work, and he's never going to attain that position. So it's incredibly hard to make a guy, to make a top guy like that, that's on that level of a John Cena. And I think Roman Reigns has all those ingredients. You know, he's way better in the ring than people think he is, or give him credit for. He's got charisma. He's not the Rock on the stick, but he's a solid promo in the character that he portrays, which is a man of few words and a badass. You know, every word he says means something, and he's intense. I think Roman has everything you would look for in a top star. He's got the pedigree. He's a second generation star. All those things. But you know, the fans, for whatever reason or for many reasons, aren't really accepting him in that role, and it's been very hard. I'm anxious to see, you know, like we talked about, how long will Vince keep his feet planted in the ground and say, you know, we're going to get this guy to where we want him to be and where he should be, and, you know, you're going to go along with it. You know, I don't know. Here's my opinion, O'Brien. I don't think that the guy, if it's not Roman, I don't necessarily think it's Seth or Dean, although it could be either one of them. I think the guy is Kevin Owens.
Yep.
And I think, I don't know if Vince will ever recognize it. I was very, very skeptical when Kevin Owens got signed. Because I know, yeah, we all know as wrestling fans, Vince has a certain idea in his head of what a top guy looks like. It's one of the reasons why he wanted Sheamus in that spot. Big guy, in shape, you know, distinctive. When he walks into a room, you know he's somebody. That's what he looks for. Roman fits that mold. Kevin Owens, I know he was how talented he is. I know he's great in the ring. I know he's good on the stick. I looked at him and I said, that guy's never going to make it in WWE because Vince will just never see him as a top guy. And I'm stunned, pleasantly so, that it seems like Vince has gotten beyond that and really sees the talent that this guy has. My thinking is, somewhere down the line, he's going to turn babyface. And when he does, he could almost be a Dusty Rhodes, everyman type character who doesn't look like he should be a star. He's not tanned. He's overweight. He's not what you would expect. He's not the greatest looking guy in the world. He doesn't have movie star features like The Rock or John Cena or Roman Reigns. But, man, the people, I think, when they flip that switch and turn him, I think they're going to love him. And I think the fact that he has that everyman look, he's another Daniel Bryan, I think, waiting to happen.
And in the meantime, even him as a heel, he does so many things that other people just don't do. Just so many different little things when it comes to...
He's the best all-around performer in the business right now. I can't think of anyone who has the in-ring ability, the promo skills, the charisma, and as you said, does all the little things, the psychology. Who's better?
I know. And even with... he's like the only guy that sells injuries from day to day, which is crazy to think about, but he's a guy that will come out after, you know, the day after Money in the Bank, and he's limping. You know, we've seen that before.
I noticed it. And I look for those things, as I'm sure you do. Who's going to be selling after something like that happens? Sure enough, there's KO with a little limp as he's coming down the aisle. And, you know, you just know something like that's not going to get past him. And, I really, really hope WWE realizes what they have in him because, like I said, I think he can be huge as an everyman type babyface. I mean, the guy's got a great sense of humor. He's funny. You know, to me, that's the guy right there. And I, like I said, I just hope WWE gives him the chance.
Well, I'm going to be curious to see how the draft goes down and where everybody fits. How exactly do they do this? So let me ask you this then. Okay, so we know the draft is July 19th. How exactly do you think it is going to work? First of all, do you think we'll know the general managers before then? And if so, will it be a situation you think where they each draft people? Or do you think it will be one of these spin the wheel and you'll find out where they go?
Well, I've thought about that. Here's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping it's one of the drafts, which I think is the way they did the first one, which is you have two general managers out there, and it's like a regular sports draft. It's I select John Cena with the first pick. I select Roman Reigns with the second pick. That's what I want it to be, because I think that's the most realistic thing. When they would do the, you know, press your luck type things where the thing's going all around and it lands on, Jim Ross is going to Raw. Oh, let's do the next one. Oh, my God, Jerry Lawler is going to SmackDown. Who would have ever seen that coming? The two announcers switch places. You know, I think that you talk about exposing the business and just something that looks completely unrealistic. Is the way that the random, quote-unquote, random picks would come out, which were not random at all, the way they would, the way they would go down. I just think that's silly. You know, I think to me, a draft, let's draft, let's have guys making picks. And I guess on the one hand, you could say, well, it could, maybe bury some people if they're not picked highly, but I don't adhere to that. I think it's forgotten about after, I don't think anybody's going to remember, Dolph Ziggler wasn't picked till the 13th round. I don't think anybody's going to really remember that, So, and to your first question, though, about the GMs, yes, I would hope that we know who the GMs are going into the draft.
It's funny when you talk about presentation, because I agree that I'd like to see people being selected like a sports league. And, WWE doesn't always do that. They rarely do that. But as we are taping this right now, over at the Performance Center, there is a shoot weigh-in for guys that are going to be taking part in the Cruiserweight Classic coming up on Thursday, where they have to weigh 205 or less. I mean, and it's real that they are doing it. And they're going to present that like a sport. And that's what I would like to see a little bit more when it comes to that, and see where guys get selected. And I even had this idea, too. I want it to be so much like a sport. I want there to be a camera at the Performance Center with all the NXT talent in there, just in case somebody gets drafted. And you can see the reaction of somebody legit if they get drafted.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And, you know, I think it's fairly certain that the NXT guys and girls are going to be in play. And something like that where, you know, you have a little remote shot and you get the reaction. Yeah, I mean, I agree with all those things. And, you know, I hope WWE realizes that, you know, that's the way to go and that's the way to do it. If you remember when they would do those random drafts when ECW was involved in it and stuff, ECW would always get the short end of the stick, right, by a lot, because they were the third brand. Now, these picks are supposed to be random, you know, done by a spin of the wheel or whatever, yet it was always guys going to ECW that, you know, were mid-card guys elsewhere. John Cena never ended up in ECW. You know, Triple H never ended up there. So it was just so, you know, it's completely ridiculous that, yes, I think it would add much more to the presentation and to the legitimacy of it if people were up there drafting the teams.
And I think the other thing that really interests me is that, okay, we've got certain feuds going on right now. I almost think that WWE is going to have some fun in breaking some of those up and thinking, well, this is what happens when there is a draft, and then we can revisit it, you know, 18 months from now or 2 years from now, or whether it's, you know, at a WrestleMania and they do a crossover, or a Night of Champions if there's a crossover, or hey, we do another draft or there's trades or something like that, and say, well, so much for that feud. It's over already before it really, you know, takes the next step. And then there's going to be some that do continue. And I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic to see how they figure all that out.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm actually on record as saying that I'm not a huge fan, you know, of splitting up the rosters and all that, just because we saw the way it went down before, and it ultimately didn't work. And, you know, initially it was like, okay, these are Raw guys and these are SmackDown guys. And you would even have the pay-per-view where they would, you know, fight each other, and it was almost like WCW versus WWE, and there was pride in your brand. But then they, you know, through trades, through other drafts, through then it became so convoluted. I didn't know who was Raw guy, who was SmackDown guy. I didn't know what that meant anymore. They started appearing randomly on each other's shows. I just think it opens up a whole can of worms. It's just unnecessary. I don't think it really adds anything. You know, I would not do it. I don't think the talent roster is deep enough, in my opinion, to have a separate Raw and a separate SmackDown. I just don't think there are enough fresh matchups there. I think it's going to get old very quickly. And then they're going to start shuffling the rosters again. And, you know, then why bother? You know, that's just, I hope I'm wrong about it.
Right. Well, here's the other thing,
too.
I'm
not excited about it.
I mean, we talk about these deep rosters, but at the same time, you keep hearing these stories about how these other talents are being contacted to come in. And we're not talking about younger guys. We're talking about veterans. Come on back. We need you. We've got to fill up these rosters. We need to sign 10, 12, 15 other guys, you know? And I wonder how that's all going to go down, because you're talking about guys that already have some name recognition, and there's talent on the show that does now, but there's other guys that are going to come back potentially and have bigger names. So what does it do to these guys to say, I've been working hard, I've been, you know, I've got a good spot right now, and I think I'm, you know, about to take another step, and now they're going to fill up the roster. And I know it's just the way of the wrestling business, but, you know, they're going to bring in some guys that probably have, you know, a bigger name right now, and see how that fits in and what WWE does with that. I mean, obviously they've had a little bit more of a youth movement, or let's get some fresh faces in here. And now they're going to have to fill up these rosters by bringing in guys that have been there before.
And I think even with bringing in some, you know, maybe like you said, some names from the past, bringing up some guys from NXT, I just still don't think it's going to be enough. I mean, we talk about it all the time. Raw, a three-hour Raw, a lot of times is a chore to get through. And it's very hard to do 16 segments every week with the roster that they have now and make it compelling for 3 hours. Now you're talking about taking half of the talent and moving them all for Raw onto another show. I don't know if there's enough, you know, MVPs and John Morrisons and whoever else is out there, and then put in those spots on Raw that are going to make the 3 hours any better than they are right now. I can't see how it's going to work.
Who would you like to see come back? Give me one or two guys.
I just mentioned one. I think, you know, John Morrison, I've always been a fan of his work. I think it'd be great if he was available. I wrote a piece yesterday on the blog how I would love to see Kurt Angle come back as one of the GMs. You know, I know that doesn't scream new era, but it's been 10 years since he's been a GM, and I think people would be happy to see him, and it would be a way for WWE to ease him back into as an on-air character without having to wrestle right away. You know, whether there's any trepidations about him for health reasons or other reasons, bring him back in a non-wrestling role, see how he does, and then, you know, one or two times a year on the big shows, you could have Kurt Angle involved in an angle and wrestle. So I'd love to see Angle come back. You know, as far as anybody else, I don't know who's – I see all these names speculated about on the Internet, but I don't know who's – you know, like I see Jeff Hardy's name out there. As far as I know, Jeff Hardy signed to TNA and isn't available. So.
Right. I don't think Jeff's contract comes up until the end of the year.
Yeah. I mean, there's some guys out there, again, I don't know the exact contract status, but there's some guys WWE really missed on. EC3 is one. Drew McIntyre is another.
Yep.
I would love to see those guys get another chance, you know, and really be given a chance to do something. Whether that will ever happen, you know, I don't know. But there's certainly talent out there. But again, I just don't think there's enough to make this draft work. And you know, I'll take a wait and see, and hopefully I'm wrong about it. But
well,
we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, and here's another thing: when it comes to some of these guys that are potentially out there, okay, do I want to go back to WWE, which obviously is the biggest company in the world? But I could potentially get lost in the shuffle. Or do I want to stay where I'm at right now? And yes, maybe I have to work a little bit harder to get bookings and do all these different things and whatnot. But I do control my own schedule. And I like the star level that I'm at right now. And I'm at a really good spot. You know, I mean, there's a lot that goes into that equation.
Well, for a couple of guys that we mentioned, like EC3, like Drew McIntyre, Drew Galloway, I think if TNA were in a better state right now, financially or otherwise, I think it almost might be a no-brainer that those guys are happy there, and if they felt the company was stable, they may not, and I have no idea, I'm just speculating, but they may not want to go back. They may be perfectly happy where they are. But on the other hand, you know, and again, it's hard to sometimes know what's fact from fiction with all the stories you hear about TNA and the financial stability and so forth, but you have to wonder if there's not, if there is question there about the long-term viability of the company, that guys like that would maybe want to make the jump back, take a leap of faith that the company will look at them in a new light once they get back there.
It's funny you talked about Kurt Angle when it comes to the GM position, because, well, first and foremost, this is being built up right now that Shane gets one show, Stephanie gets the other. I think they're going to be on the same show. I think Vince likes that idea of having the family squabble continue, and somebody else does get the other show, probably SmackDown. And Angle, though, he went on, I think it was on Mark Madden's afternoon sports radio show, and said, oh yeah, I talked to Triple H and Vince McMahon 6 weeks ago. They want to bring me back in some kind of role. So, okay, you from your time of working with the company, how frustrating was it, if at all, when you're trying to do secrets and surprises, and then things get out, especially in a situation like this where the guy's just openly talking about it?
Yeah, and it was surprising to see Kurt say that, if it is in fact true that he had those talks. To answer your question, working there, it was always a frustration when you would see things get out that, you know, sometimes it was really mind-boggling when, you know, there would only be a handful of people in a room. There were times when we would have these separate booking meetings with Vince when only certain writers, it was usually the head writers, and I was a lot of times in those meetings, there's only six or seven of us in the room. And we would at times be told to, you know, kayfabe the rest of the writing team. There were certain things that were, we would always have the minutes or notes from these meetings with Vince, there were certain things that the writer's assistants who were taking notes on the meeting were told to omit. So one example that comes to mind is Brock Lesnar. When Brock first came back, there weren't a lot of people in the inner circle immediately who knew about it. And I was one of the writers who knew, and we were told that we couldn't tell the rest of the writing team that Brock was coming back. It was, you know, a big secret. But what happened? It got out. You know, even though we tried our best, there's like six people that know. The rest of the writing team doesn't know, but it still got out. You know, people were chanting for Brock that night before he came out and confronted John Cena. So it's very frustrating. You know, the other thing was that a lot of times there was a lot of misinformation out there. We would sometimes laugh we would look at the dirt sites and just see things that were supposedly, you know, the creative plan for so and so is this and this. We would look at each other like, no, it's not. Like, that was never even discussed. So we would speculate, are they just making this up, or did they have a bad source? Or do they have a source who's intentionally feeding them bad information? Because there was a lot of stuff out there that just was completely false.
Right. Especially when it comes to Mania lineups, I'm sure, because those always seem to be so much different than the speculation that was out there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. Like, we never really, you know, figured out, like, how is this stuff, like, we really didn't know. Like, are they making it up, or are they really being told this and they're just not being told correctly? I have no idea. I never found out the answer to those questions. But, you know, the thing with Kurt, and I saw the quote you're talking about, or the interview he did with Madden, he was quick to say that, oh, but I won't be part of the brand extension. You know, so
but there was a chuckle about that, too. Kind of, I think the conversation was something like, oh, you know, Vince told me that they're going with a youth movement, but now they're doing the brand extension, and there's a big laugh between everybody. Right, they're doing a youth movement. That thing's over now. I mean, if they're reaching out to guys like him, and I'm not saying he would be a full-time performer, but if they're reaching out to, say, you know, some of the guys that have been bantied about, that's not a youth movement. That's let's get some talent in here that our audience knows that can fill up roster spots and can hopefully help draw.
That's true. You know, the youth movement in it would be, these would be guys probably coming back, like, much like the Dudley Boys, guys with name recognition who were brought back for the sole purpose of putting over the youth. You know, that's the way. And look, again, when I was at WWE, some of the names I'm hearing bandied about now were discussed back then. One of them was MVP. And, you know, there was talk of MVP coming back to WWE. And someone in management, very high up, said, you know, they weren't very high on him. And they said, look, I made it clear to him, if he's coming back, he's not getting a big push. He's basically coming back to put other younger guys over. And that's why that ended up never happening. You know, John Morrison there was a discussion of him coming back when I worked there as well, and it was the same kind of thing. Not that he was going to necessarily be putting everybody over, but that John Morrison wanted to come back in a major spot, and management, like, no, we don't see you as that guy. Maybe you could get to that level, but you're not going to be brought in at that level. You know, so... if there is a bunch of veterans, there are a bunch of veterans who are being signed. I don't necessarily know that that's condemnation of a youth movement. I think it might actually be, well, here's some guys who are going to try to help make these guys, the younger guys.
I can just imagine the reaction on Vince's and Triple H's face after they found out Angle did that interview. Like, what the hell, man?
Yes, I'm sure.
And I know that Kurt and Mark are good friends, but there comes a time when good friends have private conversations, and Kurt is just too damn honest.
Yeah, there are certain times when you just have to keep your mouth shut, you know. But look, I think if WWE really wants Kurt, I don't necessarily know that his loose lips are going to cost him a spot, necessarily.
I don't think so either. I don't. Yeah. It's funny that they went from a policy where it seemed like they were against ever bringing him back to where here's a brand extension. And so, Kurt, what are you doing right now? Free agent, huh? How would you feel about coming back here?
Well, the landscape has completely changed.
Sure.
I mean, there are guys in WWE now who they had no, you know, AJ, there's no secret. AJ Styles is one of them. when they said the other night, you know, for 15 years, he was told he wasn't, they didn't want him, that's true. You know, again, the 3 years that I was there, there were a number of guys from TNA who wanted to get into WWE, and they were just told no, you know.
Well, Bobby, here's the question. Roode, was it because of size now, or was it because of TNA guys were persona non grata?
It's hard to say. I mean, it just seemed to me, from what I heard from various people, were that we just don't need them. You know, we're developing talent at NXT, and those are going to be the next generation of stars. You know, Bobby Roode's a solid worker, but we don't need him. We got solid workers that we're developing in NXT. AJ Styles is great, but you know what? We got guys that do those flippy moves and everything. Now, yeah, I'm not saying I agree with it, but we got our own guys who can do that stuff, and they're younger. And, you know, Matt Morgan, you know what? We got big guys that we're developing in NXT that are better than him. And that was the feeling, was we're developing our next generation of talent, and we don't need TNA's talent to do it.
Yeah, and that's totally changed. I mean, just look at the past 2 years. I mean,
Samoa Joe is another one.
Samoa Joe is the biggest one to me in the way that they set the trend, because he comes in and he's got a contract where basically he can work other places. Then quickly they just say, you know what, we're going to just sew him up. And he's got a really unique deal from the standpoint that he's not even training at the Performance Center, but he's under a WWE contract. You know, Austin Aries has a contract where he can work NXT, but he can work indies. You know, same with, you know, Ciampa and Gargano, you know, and we're seeing this happen more and more often. You know, Bobby Roode, we don't know what his contract status is yet, but he just worked the overseas tour with them. You know, it looks like Eric Young's going to be coming in, and I don't know what his deal is going to be. So it's just weird how, like out of nowhere, that just totally changed, especially like over the last 6 months, where it's like this flood of guys that worked with TNA are now coming on in. And I don't even know if they're ever going to make it to the main roster, but they're under the WWE umbrella with NXT.
Well, the big thing was NXT really emerging as a separate touring brand. And that's what it was. You know, it wasn't just a developmental area anymore, a developmental company. It was like, hey, we're going to actually take this show out on the road. And it's going to be like our version. It's a WWE version of a top indie. And so they needed guys to do that. They needed guys with some name recognition to do that. And Samoa Joe, obviously a perfect guy to appeal to that audience. You know, and that's when everything opened up. You know, that's when a guy like Bobby Roode can get a job there, and Eric Young, and, you know, James Storm could have potentially had a spot there. So all bets are off at this point. And like you said, guys have unique deals now. It's not like you have to be exclusive. You know, guys are writing their own ticket to some extent, which is great. You know, it's great for the guys in the business. And obviously it benefits WWE and NXT. So it's a completely different landscape right now than what we were used to just, you know, even a year prior.
Absolutely. You know, and there's going to be so many different things that are going to be happening with WWE, you know, over this next, you know, month especially, and then going into SummerSlam. It's a crazy time right now. But then you want to talk about crazy. I need to know what's going on with the entourage over at MCW.
Well, you know, no one's unbeatable, you know, and entourage slipped on a banana peel, lost the MCW Tag Team Championships a couple months ago.
Mm.
But, you know, we're already two-time champions, and this just means we can soon call ourselves three-time champions.
What a sad state of affairs from you.
Well, you know, we're going to make the entourage great again.
You're going with that damn line? Dear God, not you too.
Yeah, me too. Everybody's using that line, right?
Yeah, I think people are going to start getting away from that, considering the way that the things are swinging for that particular person.
Well, I think if you're a heel, it's okay, though.
Yeah, for a heel, yes, still is. Yeah. And that is you, quintessential heel when I think of you.
Absolutely.
So July 16th, the Shamrock Memorial Cup 16 in Joppa, Maryland for MCW. What is Entourage going to be up to on that show?
Well, we don't know what's going to happen on that show yet, but
what?
I would think that we're going to get another shot at the MCW Tag Team Champions with Punk Rock All-Stars. We we were in a triple threat match with them and another team at the most recent show. Punk Rock All-Stars retained, but they did not take the fall on one of my guys. And we have never gotten our straight-up rematch. You know, we were put in a triple threat because the commission has a they don't like me for some reason, which I have no idea why.
Shocking.
You know, Brian, I mean, for years. I'm one of the most likable guys you'll ever want to meet.
Absolutely.
But they're trying to stick it to us. So I have a feeling that that's what we'll be doing that night, although I'm not sure. But obviously the big news there is that Sting will be appearing at the Shamrock Cup.
Sting and Lex Luger.
Sting and Lex Luger, yep.
So, well, here's another question I have for you then. Because I know you like to show off some of your WWE badges that you've had from over the years. How many different badges do you still have?
What do you mean, show off? I don't badges. I don't need those
sport
badges.
Oh, well, you've sported like some WWE credentials. What's that?
That line? Did you get my stinking badges line? look it up on Google. Yeah, you know, it's instant heat, right? Just walking around with those WWE credentials. Excuse me. It's instant heat, you know, because I can throw it in people's faces and say, look, I work for the biggest company in the world, and you will never, ever work there, and it's such a privilege for you to be in my presence.
Sure. I forgot that was from Blazing Saddles. I apologize.
Yes, there you go.
I apologize.
You're not that young. Come on.
I know I'm not, you know. Who doesn't like watching a friggin' horse get punched in the face?
but enough about Lillian Garcia.
Whoa! Oh, man. Wow. It's just nasty right there.
All right, kid Lillian.
Hey, man.
You know, they used to make a lot of horse face jokes about her, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I had a little thing with Lillian. So when I was around about 10 years ago. Okay, so I'm like around 34 years old, 35, somewhere in that range. So I had braces at that time. I went to a hotel where I was invited to meet up with Jim Ross, because he was still working there, and Lillian Garcia. You know, WWE PR invited me to go there. And I sat down, and at one point I was talking to Lillian Garcia, who did not know how old I was, and never had met me before. And I look a little bit younger, but I don't know if I looked as young as she thought when she turned to me and said, so tell me, Brian, what are your hopes and dreams when you grow up?
That's very Lillian.
What are your hopes and dreams?
Well, you know, she was my favorite ring announcer when I worked there. She was my favorite right behind Justin Roberts, Tony Chimmel, and anyone else.
Poor Lillian, she can't win anybody over.
No. You know, one time she tripped coming down the ramp.
Yeah.
She was wearing these high heels and she tripped. And they showed that in the production meeting, like on a loop of just Lillian tripping over and over and over again.
They love picking on her. She was at, what show was it that I was at? The Raw after Mania. There was like two or three mix-ups. And she was yelling at her floor producer, and I was like, this is not good. I mean, I was across the arena, and I could see it going down. And it was just like, that's a tough job. That's a really tough job. People just love picking on Lillian. I hope she has a good sense of humor about it.
Well, I mean, she must be okay with it because she's been there for a long time. That's all I can say.
Yeah. So everybody can go on to Twitter and follow you there. It's at KevinEck_WWE. People can also read the Eck Factor blog. It's at KevinEckWrestling.sportsblog.com. The all new look to the sports blog as well. So everybody can check that out. And of course, you can keep up with the Ectourage and go to MCW events up in the Northeast. Just go to MCWProWrestling.com. Always appreciate the conversation, Kevin. Still waiting for my Ectourage t-shirt. And, you've got my information, so whenever you want to send that, please do.
As soon as I get the check, you got the shirt, buddy.
You got it. So everybody can also follow me online. It's at Brian Fritz. That's on Twitter. And please make sure you subscribe to the podcast. You can do it on iTunes or on Stitcher. Rate and review the podcast. That helps out tremendously. You can also find it over at SoundCloud. Just go to soundcloud.com/betweentheropes. You can download it there. You can even embed it on your own website as well, because I know Kevin is going to be doing that once this podcast is online. So thanks again, everybody, for listening in. Talk to you soon.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Now, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.